Welcome to the Changing Earth Podcast with Sarah F. Hathaway, blending survival, fiction, and fact to bring you entertaining education that'll help you dream, survive, and thrive. And now, here's your host, Sarah F. Hathaway.
Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of the Changing Earth Podcast. My name is Sarah F. Hathaway, and I am proud to bring you this brand new podcast. On the Changing Earth podcast, we'll be exploring survival fiction and facts. This is a brand new format to the podcasting world, so let me explain how things will work. The very first thing we're going to do is we're going to hear a chapter from my new novel, Day After Disaster. It is book one in the Changing Earth series. Many people learn better through stories, so I thought it was important to bring you an entertaining story that also shares some really great survival information. And to that end, each week I will be interviewing a survival professional who will come and speak with us about a theme or a topic that was discussed during that chapter. I'm very thrilled on the great lineup of individuals I have for you, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So on that note, let's go ahead and start listening to Chapter 1 of Day After Disaster. Day After Disaster by Sarah F. Hathaway. Dedication. For Cynthia, may happiness shine upon you like your endless love and support has always shined upon me. For TR, may your passions always guide you like the fire you have lit in my heart. Chapter 1. Erica woke up in a panic to the smell of must and wine. She was frantic and could not move. Where was she, and why did an immense pain overwhelm her? She tried to calm herself and let her tears rinse the stinging out of her eyes so she could focus, but there was darkness all around her. As her pupils began to widen, adjusting to a dark room, she realized her body was buried from her neck down under some immovable mass. Her mind started racing. She remembered going to work that day, just the same way she had done so many times before. She worked in a small restaurant in the Sacramento Valley. It was called El Primero. This high-class Mexican restaurant was located in a beautifully remodeled Victorian home. The home had been built in the 1800s, and had always been perfectly maintained by its owners. 4 years ago, an ambitious entrepreneur had bought the home to turn it into a restaurant that would bring Mexican food into the fine dining spotlight. True to its purpose, the chefs produced gourmet Mexican delicacies on a nightly basis in one of the finest kitchens in town. The restaurant was only a recent phase for the home, though. Its main purpose had been a residence for multiple families. Sometime during the Cold War, a paranoid homeowner had built a bomb shelter underneath the area that became the restaurant's kitchen. The bomb shelter itself had remained virtually unchanged after its installation, and rather than sealing it shut, the restaurant owner decided to make use of it instead. It made an excellent storage area for just about any supplies the restaurant needed to operate efficiently, and it wasn't long until the employees started utilizing it as a break room as well. The only way into the bomb shelter was through a heavy door that sealed tight when shut. The stairs descended downwards, and the walls were lined with cabinet space. The wooden cabinets stored everything from dry foods to napkins to cleaners. At the end of the stairs, the room opened up into an area that was originally meant to be living quarters for nuclear bomb survivors. Since then, it had been strategically stacked with plastic water jugs for the water coolers and shelves for more storage. There was also a table with a few chairs around it for working and taking a break, and a huge oak wine rack that contained the expensive wines that the restaurant boasted, which were especially chosen to accompany the Mexican dishes. Erica had run down to grab a new bottle of Merlot. She hated going down into that dark dungeon. The door would slam behind her with a bang that would make her jump. She had no choice, though. A disagreeable customer had insisted he would only drink their very finest bottle of Merlot, and the waitress had asked her to grab it for her, since she had another order up. Erica had seen the bottle on the shelf, but as she grabbed for the bottle, a severe shaking began. California always shook from time to time. In this area of the world, the Earth's plates shifted regularly enough for the inhabitants to become accustomed to the nauseating shaking, but this time was different. The Earth, rotating on its course outlined in the depths of space, is a precious miracle of life. It has been a bountiful provider for its inhabitants for generations and generations of countless species. But these new inhabitants, the humans, they developed as no animal had before. They have an insatiable urge to grow, to expand, and to change the natural process that had sustained life for so long, and it was killing the great Mother Earth. The humans have finally gone too far. Not only had they cut, carved, and dug at the delicate skin in ways that had opened huge gaping wounds in the surface, they had trampled the natural environment and destroyed all other animal species with little regard for any life but their own. They built everywhere. The Earth's own materials had been stripped from her, manipulated, and then stacked on her fragile surface like huge warts glowing and gleaming in the night. The Mother Earth had taken enough abuse. She began to shake like a dog trying to expel fleas that had been biting at it and scratching at it for too long. Erica, unaware of the extent of the Earth's fury, had been too close to the wine racks when the rumble began. She bent her legs to maintain her balance, but the wine rack began to rock back and forth. Before she could dodge it, the large oak rack teetered its last totter and fell smack on top of Erica. The incredible weight of the wood held her to the floor, and the scattered shards of glass from the broken wine bottles made her very apprehensive about her situation. She felt a stinging pain in her left arm and leg, but between the darkness of the bomb shelter and the moisture of the wine puddle she was lying in, she didn't know how badly she was hurt. She tried to force the wine rack off her as hard as she could. When she realized she was not going to be able to lift this rack on her own, panic overtook her again. She began to produce a sound as loud as her vocal cords could muster. She shouted and wailed, but her desperate pleas went unheard. Finally, exhausted, her crying ceased. Her throat was too sore to continue. She stared up, through the darkness, at the heavily sealed door, and realized that no one could hear her, no matter how loud she yelled. It was useless. If no one can hear me, I'll have to wait for someone to find me. They'll probably notice I'm missing in no time. Erica's worn-out vocal cords scratched as she spoke. While she waited for help, the pain began to eat into every fiber of her being. She had to think about something else, but her mind was in a panic. The dark and quiet made it even harder to block out the pain, so she began to talk to herself. I wonder why no one has come to look for me. They must know I'm missing. That guy is probably grumbling more about his wine. I wonder what time it is. I wonder if Vince had made it home from work with Dexter before the quake hit. I wish I could call him. Her cell phone was in her green bag that she carried to keep her personal belongings in. It was stacked right over there on a shelf with the other employees' purses and backpacks. She looked towards it through the blackness, wishing she could reach it and call the man she loved so much. She knew he would always be there to help her, and she desperately wished he was there now to help lift the load that seemed to be crushing her into a pancake on the freezing cold cement floor. Pain, shock, and fatigue finally took their toll on the pinned woman, and she fell into a daze filled with dreams. She dreamed of her husband, Vince, with his brown curly hair and matching beard, his eyes that could see into her very soul, and his tall, lean body that was perfectly accentuated by his little round belly. He had a great smile, and he was never afraid to announce the sheer joy of being married to her brought him. She dreamed of her son, Dexter. He was already 5 years old, but it seemed like just yesterday that Erica had given birth to him. Erica had a fairly easy pregnancy, and on the day that she did finally hold him in her arms, she embraced a baby for the very first time in her life. At that moment, she learned that there was a type of love that was so unbreakable and remarkable that it made her breathless even in her dreams. She had watched her precious baby grow into a little boy. His blonde hair formed a perfect outline around his fine-looking facial features. His eyes were a steely gray, and they seemed to hold an ancient wisdom within them. Erica's dreams were shattered when she awoke to another rumble that made the heavy oak rack grind into every bone of her body. Her pain was searing. She felt like the herbs between a mortar and pestle, but these herbs were being marinated in Sauvignon Blanc and White Zinfandel. What the hell is going on? They have to be looking for me now. How long have I been here? Where is everyone? Gosh darn it, someone help me. What if no one knows I'm still down here? Well, I've got to get out of here. My leg is throbbing and my arm is too, for that matter. What if I'm really hurt and I've been trapped here for God knows how long? She finished speaking in a frantic tantrum of frustration. The rant of emotion seemed to give her a new strength. With a sudden flash of fierce determination, she decided she would have to free herself. She had to lift this thing off her, but she could just barely recoil her arms enough to give a desperate heave on the rack. With all her effort, she lifted the heavy rack a tiny bit, but that was all she could do. It was so heavy, she had to quickly let it go, and it fell back on her bruised body again. What am I going to do? This thing weighs a ton. I have to get out. Erica's mind reeled. Logic was unreachable, but the instinctive survival side of her took over. Her eyes had adjusted as much as they could to the darkness of the shelter. She swiveled her head around, and in the shadows, she thought she could see a milk crate that had been used to transport the wine to the rack. It didn't look too far out of reach. If she could just free her right hand, maybe she could reach it. She heaved up on the oak rack again. This time, she only tried to move it enough to move her arm. She found that the little bit she could push it up was enough to squeeze her hand up toward her head until she had it extended out above her. She couldn't hold the rack up for long, though. When she dropped the rack back down on her, there was only one arm to support the weight of the oak, and it fell hard onto her ribs. She exhaled as the wind was ripped out of her lungs. After she caught her breath, she knew that she had to free herself as quickly as she could. She needed to find out if she was seriously hurt, because at that moment, she felt like every bone in her body was broken. She reached out for the crate. She knew that it was essential to get a good grip on it. Any attempt to just touch the crate might push it farther away and diminish the possibility of escape from her wine rack cage. All in one movement, she thrust the rack up and grabbed the crate. Her finger slid through the square holes in the milk crate and she pulled it closer. The next step would be the most critical part of her escape. She gathered her strength, got the crate into position, and sent a silent plea to her God asking him for his help and the strength she needed to do this. She shoved as hard as she could. It was working. She moved the oak rack higher than ever before. With extreme precision, she held the rack with one hand and slammed the crate into a space just barely big enough for it to fit with the other. She did it. There it was, right next to her shoulders. A huge load had been lifted off her chest, but Erica could still not breathe easily. The incredible weight of the oak rack was only being held by one tiny milk crate. The crate began to bend under the heavy load. A wash of anticipation and adrenaline took control of her emotions. Even though her legs were still pinned, she was going to be free soon. The next step was not nearly as critical, but all the more physically straining. She had devised a process of pushing up enough on the rack so she could keep sliding the crate farther and farther towards her legs. Then, the crate, straining and bending under the pressure, finally reached the middle of the rack. Working the rack like a teeter-totter, she rocked it back so it rested on her chest, and slowly bent her stiffened legs up towards her. She was amazed her left leg moved, and more importantly, this meant that despite the throbbing pain emanating from it, the bone was not broken. After her legs were curled into her abdomen, she began to rock the rack back to where her legs had been. Free from the restraint, she wormed her way out. That concludes the reading of Chapter 1 of Day After Disaster. And during our survival professional segment, I would like to warmly welcome Lisa Bedford, a.k.a. the Survival Mom. Lisa was always the mom with a case of water bottles and blankets in the trunk of her car, and famous for saying, just in case. 4 years ago, when she began to see signs of a deteriorating economy, she wondered, is there a way I can be more proactive and get my family ready for an uncertain future? The answer was yes. And that's when the Survival Mom was born. She's put her own research mistakes and successes together in her book because deep down, every mom is a survival mom. We all want the same thing, a safe, thriving family. You'll find hundreds of tips and strategies in Survival Mom for steering your own family through uncertain and uncharted waters as our 21st century continues to unfold. A great companion to the book is her blog, www.thesurvivalmom.com. That's www.thesurvivalmom.com. And that is where she posts up-to-the-minute articles, weekly action steps, and the always popular instant survival tips. You'll find hundreds of articles on topics ranging from finances to food storage to videos and humor. If you can't get enough of Survival Mom, follow her on Twitter and Facebook. There are thousands of other moms out there just like you. I would like to welcome Lisa Bedford to the show. She's here to discuss earthquake safety with us. Thank you very much for being here, Lisa.
You're welcome. I was thrilled when you invited me.
Thank you. I appreciate your time a lot. In this chapter, we're introduced to our main character, Erica, and she's trapped under a wine rack after an earthquake strikes. Erica is caught unaware by this earthquake and is trapped. Given your extensive library of survival awareness materials, what are three steps that everyone should take to be ready just in case an earthquake were to happen?
Well, I probably have four. The first one is realizing that earthquakes, they can happen just about anywhere. When I was growing up, Sarah, and for many years, it was Southern California, and it was just a handful of locations. And now we're hearing of earthquakes in all kinds of crazy places. So I would say just that, you know, for each person, just to think to yourself, you know, I'm not 100% safe from earthquakes wherever I am right now. And then also, sometimes we forget that we go on vacations. We go on business trips. Our kids go to summer camp or they're over at grandma's house. So there are lots of different times where and places where earthquakes can happen. And we just can't count just because, you know, I live in the middle of Texas or wherever. We can't assume that we are safe from earthquakes. So that would be number one. Number two, and it's kind of mundane, but consider buying earthquake insurance. And I know that in the survival and prepper, you know, worlds, we don't really talk about insurance as though it's just too everyday. But unless there is just an utter and complete collapse of civilization, you're going to need some insurance. And so find out from your policy, your insurance agent, what is covered. You might need to have a separate rider on your policy for earthquake damage. And earthquake damage can be really, really expensive, especially if it affects your roof, if it affects the foundation of your home, your plumbing. Do you really have that kind of money in savings to take care of those big, huge ticket items or maybe rebuild your home? So find out, you know, what is covered and what's not covered. Number three, take a look at your house. And see, how is it most vulnerable? Maybe you live near power lines. Maybe you have big trees with branches that could very easily fall onto those power lines and knock those power lines over. And now all of a sudden, not only do you have earthquake damage you have to deal with, but now you have live power lines that have fallen on your property or maybe even on your home. So take a look at that. And cutting down tree branches is not a bad idea anyway, whether it's a hurricane or tornado or in this case, an earthquake. Also consider the power lines that come into your house, gas lines. My gosh, one of the most amazing sights following an earthquake are just all the fires that happen across a town or a city. So find out if there are gas lines in your home that could break. I mentioned the foundation of your home. You know, learn a little bit about that because those get really expensive to repair. If your roof is old, if it's sagging, that's going to collapse a whole lot more quickly than a roof that's in really good shape. So just try to assess your house. You know, what could be most vulnerable in a big earthquake and try to fix what you can. Maybe boost your insurance amounts on things that, oh my gosh, we can't afford, you know, that much money on a roof repair. Well, make sure that that roof would be covered in case of an earthquake. And then finally, just really a practical thing is to put together just a small group of items to protect your head and your eyes and your feet in case of a big earthquake. And those could just be having a spare pair of glasses or maybe just small safety goggles, along with, a face mask to protect your nose and your mouth breathing in, because whatever is in your attic, whatever types of materials have been used in construction, and not just your home, but in all the buildings around you, you know, just think 9/11. Think when those buildings collapsed, and one of the biggest dangers for the survivors was just whatever was blown around in the air in the aftermath. So that would be a really low ticket item to add to your emergency kit, and a good flashlight. You should put those items just somewhere at a bedside table. Just keep those items, make sure they're in an emergency kit if you're away from home, in your vehicle. All of those things could be kept in the glove compartment of your vehicle. And then sometimes, very often, if you live in an area where you know earthquakes are happening, get in the habit of putting a pair of shoes, closed-toed shoes, by your bedside. And maybe they just are always there. Maybe it's a pair of closed-toed shoes you don't wear very often, but they're comfortable, and just keep them there, because the last thing you want to do, or you, for you, your kids, your loved ones, is to try to get out of a danger zone in bare feet. So those are my tips.
Those are some great tips. I love the insurance tip. An important thing to remember when you're going with insurance, I used to sell insurance. So you need to really look at that policy and see, sometimes unless there's the foundational and structural damage, they're not going to cover the stuff inside of your house. So you might want to make sure that your china and things that are extra ticket items on your household insurance are covered even heavier, you know, that they're itemized out on a list, because get damaged. Yeah. And then the earthquake insurance might not kick in if you don't have actual damage to the structure. So, and that can be rather costly. I like that one a lot. And then you mentioned the power lines. That's a great point, especially out here in California. We have such a wildfire risk right now that if the power lines went down, we would definitely have, we have wildfires going crazy right now, regardless.
Right, I know.
Yeah. So that's another great point. And then I love the fact, you know, put the shoes by the bedside. You're going to have glass down and everything all around. Do you want to be walking through that? So that's a, I really like that tip. Some great tips there. That was outside the box. I like that. So when you feel an earthquake, what are you going to do? What three actions are you going to take immediately when you feel that earthquake?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's really important that our kids know what to do and what to expect. An earthquake is scary to grown-ups. It's scary to people who have been through them before. My husband grew up on Guam, spent 20-some years there. And at one point, there was a 9-point-something earthquake that hit. Uh-huh. And he tells me about just, you know, just like laying on the floor of his living room and watching the chandelier just swing literally from one point on the roof to the other. And so even for hardened earthquake survivors like my husband, there's nothing quite like that feeling of, oh my gosh, you know, the whole entire ground under you, you just take for granted that it's stable, and now all of a sudden it's not. So we want to make sure as we walk through all these steps that our kids know what to do and what to expect. But, so, you know, just the standard advice is just to get under something, the sturdiest thing you can find, and then just hold on. Things, if it's big enough, things are going to be rocking and they're going to be rolling. Anything that's up on shelves is most likely going to come down. Things made of glass, heavy books. And this might sound nutty, Sarah, but in our home, we have a really big metal dog pen. And years ago, when we had 5 Basenjis, we had the pen set up. And when we went, we're going to be gone for a long time, we'd put the 5 Basenjis in there. They were all smaller dogs. And my plan was, if there was ever an earthquake, I was going to tell my kids, you head for that pen. Because I knew it was really sturdy and they'd be in there like 2 little caged animals. But I was really confident, you know, in the strength of that particular pen. So short of having a metal dog pen in your home, just get under something. It could be a desk, it could be a table, not something attached to a wall. So right now I'm sitting at my desk, but it actually is attached to my wall because it's part of this big, huge, you know, kind of a storage thing that we got from IKEA or something. So if you're outside, just crouch. You are not going to be able to run. You're not going to be able to walk. Get away from walls or anything that might crumble on top of you. And train your kids to do all of these things. If you're in a vehicle, you just need to stop. If you can, pull over to the side of the roads, and that will get you out of the path of other vehicles that might be swerving around. And those are just in those immediate seconds, if you just know to do this, and maybe even practice, Sarah. A lot of times when we physically practice something, it just kind of embeds that muscle memory into our brains and into our bodies, and we can react more correctly when, you know, when our brain is just scared to death. And
yeah, absolutely. You
kind of go into this automatic mode.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in practice, practice, practice. And perfect practice makes perfect. Not practice makes perfect. If you practice it wrong for 1,000 times, you're going to be doing it wrong. So, and then the things you had mentioned in the first one, we grab those goggles, we grab that face shield, you know, cover up your face, because afterwards, that's when you're going to be breathing all those particles and things like that. Mm-hmm. The classic advice was to get in the doorway, you know, because it's dirty, right? But they've proved now that that's not a good idea, right?
They've gone away from that, and they've also, there was the triangle of life was being passed around in emails for a few years there, and it was just the idea of, you know, just kind of trying your best to form a triangle, like it could be a mattress against a bed frame or something, and then getting inside that little, you know, triangular area. But the person who put that together, it really was not well documented that it worked. The cases where people, you know, survivors have been found in that so-called safety triangle, it was just pure coincidence that, you know, they just happened to be there. That is not recommended by anyone who is an expert in earthquake safety.
So no triangle of life. Just get to
sounds awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
But I think I would feel safer in that dog, kennel there.
Dog kennel.
Yeah. So, okay. So after the earthquake has occurred, there are steps that we should be taking. Can you share what some of the immediate steps we should take after the earthquake has stopped? We've kind of assessed, made sure everybody's safe. What should we be doing after that?
You know, just be ready for aftershocks. Those could happen within minutes. They could happen within hours. They could happen within days. And so just brace yourself. And, you know, your kids are going to be terrified. So it's really important to let them know, you know, there could be another one of these. It could be a shaker. It could be a roller, you know, but we could have another one of these, you know, so, you know, just be prepared for that. So, the important point is just to get away from immediate danger. My goodness, if a gas line is broken in your home, you're starting to smell gas, my gosh, get out. Get out. Yeah. Even if you have to run over splintered wood or glass, you need to get out of that area. So anything that you just immediately observe is an immediate danger, get away from that. And it could be crumbling walls. I would take a look, Sarah, wherever you spend a lot of time during your daily routine, your weekly routine, see how often you're in buildings that are just old. They're just old buildings, and you might want to just be aware, you know, I work in a, you know, you might say, well, okay, I work in a bank. This bank building, you know, was built in the 1950s. I don't know how safe it would be. So just kind of be aware of the age of buildings and how they're constructed, and just know, you know, I'm not in a building that might have been built, you know, according to earthquake code. So this one might not be the safest place to stay in an earthquake, but it is better to be outside in an open space than to risk, you know, injury or death from things that are falling. As soon as you can, shut off gas, water, electricity lines to your house. So you need to know where those shut off valves are. You need to know how to shut off the power, you know, how to shut off the water. And then, really important, man, you need to have the right tool for that job.
Oh, yeah.
And some people have gone so far as to fix to the wall or to, the, you know, wherever that gas line is, you know, that valve is. They have actually, whether they've taped it up or they've had some, you know, managed to just fix that thing with a screw or a nail to the wall right by that shutoff valve. Otherwise, you know, you can come back to a home that's flooded. Maybe the sewer lines have backed up. Oh, my gosh. Now you have, you know, broken down home, a collapsed roof. Now you have sewage everywhere. So if you know, it's really important to know how to do those things. And then finally, and this might even be number one or two on this list, but check to see if anyone needs medical attention. And for that reason, I highly recommend a first aid class, a wilderness first aid class, going through CERT, C-E-R-T, that series of classes, to kind of give you at least the fundamental skills to take steps if someone near you is injured and needs help.
Right, because it could be a situation where lots of people need help. So if you can render help right off the bat, then you'd be better off than waiting for somebody who might have bigger priorities than you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Okay. Yeah, the gas, water, and power line and the tool, having the tool right there, that's a great idea. Then you're not digging through your toolbox and trying to find the right one right after. You can just grab that thing and shut it down. And that's a really important one because, like you say, it can get explosive rather fast if you're smelling gas.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Okay, so now a fictional scenario for you. You're at home, earthquake happens, and your home and your shelter are rendered uninhabitable. Mm-hmm. What would you be doing to keep you and your family safe?
You know, when you've lost everything, I think that initially the shock is just tremendous. I mean, if you can, you know, what I've always wondered about, the people who are standing in the rubble of their home after a hurricane or after a tornado, what is it like to right. see this? I mean, we take to such a high level just for granted that this home I'm sitting in right now, I mean, I'm just taking for granted that it's not going to be blown away. It's not just going to collapse on me, you know, like a little building made out of Legos. And all of a sudden it's happened. I think the first thing is just, it's hard, I know, but just to accept what's happened. Because the longer you sit there or the longer you stand there in shock and you're not taking action right away. I mean, I've seen people just in shock, you know, in the first precious moments or hours. And that is when you really need to start taking action. And so just by walking through these steps and getting prepared, you've already, in a way, prepared your brain for this possibility. And so the first thing is just to take some deep breaths and just calm down and say, okay, I have to accept what's happened and now I have to adapt. Accept and adapt, because this is your new reality, at least for a while. You're going to need help. It's not a time to be proud. You know, that sister-in-law that you had, you know, some words with, you know, 4 years ago at a birthday party, you know, she might be just the person that you need right now for seeking out help. There are government agencies, in fact, some of the quickest groups that come into play and have things on the ground fastest for help are church groups. Salvation Army, a lot of times, almost always, they are at work and at play, and I mean in play, way before FEMA or way before a government group, you know, with all their red tape. So accept whatever help is offered, ask for help. This is also where camping gear and some basic camping skills can come in handy, because your tent. Your tent trailer might be under the rubble, your nice RV, it might not be able to get through, you know, roads where you have downed trees and a lot of debris, but pitching a tent somewhere in a safe location, having with you a camp stove, you know, with some type of fuel, whether it's a stove that, you know, operates on a few twigs, like one of the really highly efficient rocket stoves that are out there. It sounds odd, but having just that temporary shelter can get you by until you can find something with relatives or friends or through a church or whatever. And then you're going to need funds. And I'm a huge believer in having cash on hand, getting your hands on money, because that is going, money makes the world go round. If I have a wad of cash, I can buy what we need. I can buy fuel from the gas station if it's open. You know, I can pay someone to drive my family, you know, to a town, you know, 40, 50, 100 miles away. Without cash, without something to trade, without something of value, you're now a beggar. And so, you know, people will probably have mercy on you, but it just gives you pretty much access to things you're going to need to survive. And so those are the very first things I would do.
Yeah, that's a good point about the cash, because if, you know, the disaster was that grand scale, you might not be able to use your card. The lines might be down, or if the power was out, then, you know, all those cards are just useless. They don't have the little swiper machines anymore.
I know there are all kinds of stories, you know, from people who've lived through major hurricanes and so on. And I swipe my card for groceries and gasoline, and I swipe it to get cash. I swipe it to pay for doctor's appointments. We're so accustomed to that. Well, what if you couldn't do that anymore?
Right.
And there are many, many scenarios where that would be true.
Yes, cash is king.
That's my motto.
Yeah, I try to deal in all cash because I hate that little card. There's just too much going on with that thing. So, yep. And you can't use it, like you say, you can't use it in a disaster situation. Great point, too, about the church groups and the Salvation Army, because, you know, FEMA camps can get kind of dicey as far as, like, we heard the horror stories come after Katrina and whatnot of what happened at the FEMA camp. So that wouldn't really be my first choice of a place to go, because once you're in, and they don't let you out. So the church groups.
That's right. And that's also true for Red Cross shelters. Now, worst case scenario, Sarah, I mean, if that's all we had, that's what we, you know, what my family would do is go to a Red Cross shelter. But a lot of people don't realize that once you check into that, you give them a lot of personal information. And they'll have signs up and they'll sign a statement saying, I understand that everything I bring in, you know, they're not responsible for theft. They're not responsible for just about anything.
Right.
And you have to let them know, you know, when you go someplace, you have to check out, you have to check in. There's a lot of control over movement. And I understand it from their perspective, but if you're an independent-minded person, that's going to grate on your nerves after a while.
Right. Yeah, that's not going to work for me, I don't think. I'd be like, no, why couldn't I go out and help somebody else out if I have the skills and stuff to do that, you know? So, yeah, but I like the relative idea. Just, you know, find, you got loved ones, you got friends around, you know, make that your mission rather than, you know, let, and space-wise, if you have those other options, you should probably be taking them anyway, because there's people who don't have those options that need the, you know, help of the Red Cross and whatnot, maybe more than you do.
So, right, exactly.
Yeah. All righty. Well, I love the information you gave me on the earthquake facts. That'll get us all a lot more confident when we're in our homes and trying to deal with these situations now that we've seen the rumble start across the world, really, right about now. You know, you have to wonder, is it increased media attention on these things, or do we actually experience them more at this point? And what I'm curious as to what your feeling is on that.
I think that something's going, it seems to go in cycles. You know, mm-hmm. Several years ago, we had just a whole rash of pretty good sized hurricanes. And then how many years has it been since there's been a big one? It's a long time.
Right.
Right now, there are numerous volcanoes erupting around the world.
Yep.
It's hard to say. My gut feeling is that it's happening more frequently.
Yeah, it probably accompanies the volcanic activity. I mean, it would go hand in hand.
Right.
So, yeah. And we're definitely having some shakeups, that's for sure.
So. I would agree.
All righty. Well, I want to thank you very much for being with me today. And we'll see you back on episode 21. So thank you very much for sharing your time.
Thanks. Looking forward to it.
A very special thank you to Lisa Bedford, the survival mom, for coming on and giving us some useful tips on earthquake survival. Make sure you put some of them into action today. To learn more about the Survival Mom, head on over to www.survivalmom.com. And for all the goodies on this episode, head on over to www.authorsarahfhathaway, where I have the show notes, links to Lisa's website, and links to Lisa's book. Thank you all for joining me so much today on this very special, very first episode of the Changing Earth podcast. Until next time, dream, survive, thrive.
Thank you for joining Sarah for this episode of the Changing Earth podcast. Don't forget to pick up your copy of Day After Disaster at www.authorsarahfhathaway.com. If you love this podcast, please head over to iTunes and let everyone know by leaving a review.